welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight we have another great show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality and science and several other areas. Some of this is going to be involved with Angel's Wisdom tonight. So that even goes back before recorded history. And I thought it would be good to talk about freedom of religion and ageless wisdom. Now, I'm going to put these two together. That doesn't mean that ageless wisdom, at least at this point in time, is a religion. As a matter of fact, that isn't what's intended. But it does mean that there is a relationship, and I want to show how that fits together. And I want to also define and talk about what I mean by religion, and of course, freedom, and how that all fits in with generally the concepts of spirituality, metaphysics, and, of course, religion itself. So let's start off with that idea. What do I mean by religion? Religion is my definition tonight. I'm talking about more or less orthodox religions. Now, I don't mean the kind of religion that is an orthodox version of it. I mean religion as it is generally thought of in general, and that is one that is oftentimes thought of as having a background of some universality to it. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody in an area or a specific group of people are into a certain kind of religion. I'm talking about a religious issue in which there is sometimes is referred to as organized, or is constructed from the texts or the beliefs and thoughts of preceding peoples. And so that's the kind of religion I'm referring to, not the individual religion that a person or a small group of people might say that they practice. That is not the concept that I'm referring to tonight. It doesn't mean that I am being exclusionary towards those folks, just that I'm talking about religion on a larger scale, that there's usually many, many thousands, if not millions of people who are members of in some fashion and who practice the religion in some fashion. Now, what else do I mean by religion? Well, religion is a way of communicating with, honoring, worshiping, and having some degree of contact with God or a creator. Some people would call it gods because it doesn't have to be a monotheistic brand of religion. Although, for the most part these days, most religions are monotheistic. Nonetheless, that doesn't mean that it has to be only that. Now, you might say to yourself, well, gee, that's a pretty broad subject. And what are we talking about freedom, then, in terms of religion? Well, freedom is the ability to use a religion as a person or individual sees fit within a community of other individuals who may be practicing similar ways of worshiping, communicating, having some understanding and relationship with God or gods. So this is the point I'm getting at right at the beginning, that this is both, as I'm defining it, based upon a group concern in terms of the religion itself, but an individual one in terms of its practice. That's very important, because some people may disagree with that, and others may not have ever thought of it. Individual means that even though someone belongs to any particular sect of religion, any particular version, variety, any particular way of expressing oneself with and for and towards and worshiping in faith with God or towards God, for God, depending upon how you believe your religion expresses itself, no matter what that situation is, you're doing it even though you're borrowing and using some of the same elements as many others. You're doing it on an individual basis. Now you might say, well, what about people who chant together? What about people who pray together? What about people who go to listen to preachers who preach on a collective basis to those who are their parishioners or the attendees of their preaching. Well, all of those situations involve still individuality, even though you may not think so, because the relationship with God, which is what I'm defining religion as, is coming from the individual to God or gods, back and forth, if you want to believe it that way, and is not, as I am expressing it, a way that the individuals are working together as a single source to accomplish a single thing under most circumstances. That's what I'm referring to when I say that it has individuality. Now you could say, well, what if people get together and pray for peace in the world or for the survival of many? Each is doing so for the collective agreement of how they want God to be helping. That part's true. However, their way of communicating is still on an individual basis, unless they had an open agreement with God in the place that they were doing this thing, or from the place they were doing this thing, which most people don't actually have a sense of in this day and age. And if they ever did at any time, those times have not been readily, we'll say, recorded these days. So it's difficult for us to say that in this time, we can say that collectively groups of people are having a connection or a meaningful or even non-meaningful expression together with God. They're individually having an experience with God, which they share with one another sometimes, and that they have, in some circumstances, a common interest in and hope to get a common result from. Now you could say, well, where do we come from with all this stuff? Why is this even important? Well, it's important because the rest of the show is And Ageless Wisdom, and I'm going to show some differences here and why in today's world I do not think that ageless wisdom is a religion because of some of the ways I'm defining religion right now. Now, for many people, they might say, disagree with me. They might say their religion is a social experience where they come together on a certain day of the week or days, and they collectively collectively connect with each other in a way in which they share their experiences about and with God, but they don't do it collectively as a body to and from God. They may try to do it as a body to God in the sense that they may pray for something. So this is a very difficult understanding because for most people, they just don't, you know, they don't say, well, I have to really understand what religion is. But if we don't really define what we're talking about when we do discuss religion, then we get into a quagmire somewhere down the line when someone says, well, wait a second. You've made all of these assumptions, but what about this issue? So I'm trying to cover the general idea of what religion is today, and then from there talk about it in terms of how it might change and evolve into the future, why it is, maybe where it came from in the past or where it is, and how this thing called ageless wisdom, which is really an ontological, cosmological kind of way of looking at life, that is some people call philosophy, which it is not, in my opinion, it's just a philosophy, but it goes much deeper and has more of a religious aspect to it. But nonetheless, is not yet a religion, and may never be, because it has some elements to it which are a little strange for some people's interests. Okay, so let's move forward. What do I mean by freedom? Freedom of religion. In order to be free, the individual in a religious circumstance needs to have the opportunity to express themselves to God and to in some way see, hear, experience God's response to them on an individual level, or there is a lack of freedom in religion. Now you understand why I started to define religion the way I did. And this is an important issue, because in the past there have been many times where certain religions have become unfree, where the expression of what God is saying or doing is filtered and transmitted via others to someone who supposedly belongs to a religion, but their contact with and expression to and with God is short-circuited by others, oftentimes people who belong to the religion they belong in but claim special rights because they have a higher status of some sort within the religion. It could be anything from some title that they possess, be it a bishop or maybe some kind of priest or some kind of other way of calling them something, or they express it by literally not necessarily entitling themselves, but in literally telling people what to do, as though they have this connection with God and nobody else does, and therefore that gives them some kind of special whatever, makes them something special. Okay. Now, when that happens, the concept of freedom, which is the first part of spirit and spiritual, and the first part of God's mind, becomes, we'll say, reduced and sometimes virtually eliminated. And you get a problem. And let me explain how this works. If religion, by definition, as I defined it today, for the most part, is an individual means for a person to have contact with their creator and vice versa, and it works through a number of different methods that I'm going to get to when we talk about ageless wisdom, then when you take that part out of it, you don't even have a religion anymore. You have some kind of oligarchy or some kind of other thing, and the religion becomes hollow or is no longer a valid, by my standards of definition, religion. It's missing the part that is really important, because it's missing the first part of what God is. And if you take away the first part of what God is, it's pretty hard to say that you're a real religion. Now you can say, oh, but wait a second. Most of the religions today have some of that, what you're talking about, in them. So does that mean most of them aren't real religions? In part, yes. But in other parts, no. Sometimes this process that I refer to of people having titles and using authority and power to, expropriate the God from religion, they become mini gods themselves, or at least false gods. And sometimes in the same religion, when people do that within that religion, they don't do that. So people may actually have some direct religious experience in which they're connected to on an individual basis with God and responding to what they find to be God in their life through their religion. And other times, it's short-circuited. So it's sort of like a mixed bag. And because of that, it's hard to make a complete definitive statement about any specific religion. It would be unfair to do so. And I'm going to go through some of the issues with that in the show tonight. But I do want you to realize that you can have this paradoxical kind of a thing going on, where part of what some people call a religion is anti or non-religion. Many times it's anti besides just non. And the rest of the time, which may be half or more, there is an individual connection between the people in the religion and God. So here we have a mixture. Freedom of religion is so critical, though, because the amount that freedom exists in a religion is the amount that the religion creates of more light or virtue in the world. What is virtue? Virtue is light that in some way acts its way out into form. And we talk about light. Light is really just a way of saying it's part of God's thought, which is the same as spirit. But when spirit becomes part of form and it's enlightened, then it's virtue. That's a virtue. Okay, so for religions to have a high degree of virtue, they have to have a high degree of freedom. And if they're missing that degree of freedom, then the virtue starts getting drained from the religion, and the lives of the people who are practicing or involved with the religion, and the meaning of life itself diminishes for those folks as well. This is very important, because a lot of today's show will be focused on some of those things that I'm talking about right now. And it has a lot to do with today's world. And unfortunately, the consequences are not always great, and it explains why some of the problems we're having today are happening. So it's important to really talk about this in we'll say, modern terms, besides these philosophical ones that I'm posing at the present time, which I do a lot of this stuff at the beginning of shows. You know that if you've listened before. Okay. And by the way, if you are listening and you want to call in, you can. The number's on the screen. If you phoned in on Skype, you may not have the number handy. So I'll give it to you right now. In the U.S., it's 877-876-5227. Now, if you're on a phone, you're going to have to use a different phone to call in, or you'll lose the connection with Skype. You could do that, too, and then call back in. Of course, you have that choice. So if you're doing, and there's also a Canadian number, just for the sake of saying so, 888-815-9756. If you're in Canada, you can use that number as well. Okay, so let me continue on. The point of where we've gotten to so far is that religions sometimes become hypocrisies at best, and sometimes at worst become dictatorships and tyrannical and destructive to the ability for people to communicate and have meaningful expression with their creator or God. The very idea of what a religion is, based upon how I've defined it, can be destroyed by destroying the freedom that an individual has in a religion to have contact with God. And that contact has to be between themselves and God, and not through some quote-unquote titled person, or an untitled person, but some other person who's going to do all the quote-unquote informing of what God wants, says, does, means, etc., to the people in the religion. That's going to cause a real problem then for them. Now, how does this fit in with the concepts in Ageless Wisdom? As you've heard me talk about this, many people don't even know what it is. So it's important. I'll define it for you. What is Ageless Wisdom? Ageless Wisdom describes what and how God is. And it does so in a way in which a person can gain understanding of that what and how by their experiences of whys or concepts that are proposed in Ageless Wisdom that can be checked out as a person lives their daily life and as they think about their lives as they have lived them so far. So, in other words, it's self-proving, self-testing by the individual with the world that they experience to discover God for themselves. It's a great thing because, unlike many religions which are strictly faith-based, Ageless Wisdom is mostly based upon education and concepts and thinking, a little bit but not much knowledge, a little bit in relationship to how much knowledge there is in the whole world, way more knowledge than usually is found in most religions. And it has within it the ability to both improve consciousness, which is the second part of God's mind, while exercising the absolute maximum levels of freedom. The reason the absolute maximum levels of freedom are brought about in Ageless Wisdom is because if you follow the tenets of Ageless Wisdom, there's no one standing between you and God. No one. I don't care if it's a teacher or a leader or some other person, wherever they may be. If they are following the tenets of Ageless Wisdom, they are not between God in you. You're just experiencing the world for yourself and finding out things. Even though you may have been taught about some of these things, you may have actually had some kinds of mystical experiences. You may have had a lot of book reading experiences in terms of some degree of knowledge, and you may have had some actual religious experiences where you wanted to communicate with God. You got some communication back to you that convinced you that God and you were in communication, and you were able to evaluate that in terms of many other elements in your life. All this comes together as what I refer to as the tenets or the principles of ageless wisdom. Now you can say, where did these come from? Okay. Well, in part, they are discovered through two senses in each of the three bodies that we normally use. And the three bodies, the etheric physical, that's one. The astral, that's two. And the mental, which is three. But the mental has two parts to it as well, and that's the higher mental, which are concepts, and lower mental, which is like concrete knowledge. And so you put all that together. And the two senses, one is the lower sense, connected to what people call the heart chakra in these bodies, and that gives us an understanding of God. We can directly sense God around us. No other creature on earth below the human kingdom can do this. That's us. We can do this. And we can not only sense an understanding of God, which means that that's the reason we have religion, that's the reason we have ageless wisdom, that's the reason we have all this stuff that has anything to do with God, and animals don't, because we aren't animals. We are beyond animals. And that's going to probably make some people in the totally, we'll call it evolutionary kingdom belief system, shake. Oh, no, it can't be true. But it is true, because you can think about it and you can see proof of it, and that's what ageless wisdom does. That's an example of ageless wisdom. Ageless wisdom reveals to a person how you can prove that God exists even. Just that simple but very big concept can be determined from what I just expressed in part. The other part that's interesting is the first chakra, the crown chakra, first ray type of chakra. It has to do with the energy connected with the chakra. That type of chakra is an even higher one to develop in a person, and all people have at least the capability, but they don't necessarily always use it, to understand how to create more, and to do so of an understanding and a connection with God, and create more of God in ourselves and in others. Because this is one of the purposes in ageless wisdom, that God exists. God exists because God chose that humans and all other kinds of life shall have freedom, and the freedom shall be to co-create themselves in the system that God originated. So we are participating in creation of life itself, because that's what God created initially, and by doing so, we allow ourselves to then become more connected with our Creator. So that's the principle that's employed in Ageless Wisdom. We have a caller online. Hello, caller.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Niles.
How are you doing? Who is this?
This is Bert from Manhattan. How are you doing?
Doing great, Bert. What can I do for you tonight? What would you like to say? What do you want to add to tonight's show?
Well, I just want to say that I really like your show. I think you do a great job.
Thank you very much. And I appreciate it.
And I just want to talk to you about freedom of speech versus
Are you there, Bert?
Yes, hello.
Yeah, freedom of speech versus what?
Yeah, sorry. Versus freedom of religion.
Oh, you're breaking up. Are you on a cell phone, perchance? Bert, are you there? I think freedom of speech, I think he was about to say freedom of religion. Bert, can you hear me? All right, I'm not sure. I think we may have lost him. Well, there's a big... Oh, he fell off the line. You know, sometimes when you call in on a cell phone, the vagaries of that problem is extreme because we're going through so many different connections. Anyway, let me go ahead and try to kind of say what I think that Bert was getting to. What is freedom of religion versus freedom of speech? Well, freedom of speech is kind of an interesting idea in itself. It allows us to be able to express ourselves, of course, to others and with others in a context in which we are not being, we'll say, restricted or censured by those people I said might be have titles, and sometimes they don't, but by laws and by people with titles and by anyone else. It allows us to be able to have open and readily, we'll say, exchangeable communication with others. And those others could be people or anyone else. Is that Bert again? Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, Bert?
No, this is Bobby.
Oh, hi, Bobby. All right, well, hold on, Bobby. I'm going to answer Bert's idea first, and I'll give you just a few seconds. Just hang on, okay?
Yeah, no problem.
All right, thanks. All right, so here we go. This is so you can have this kind of expression with other people. It's a wonderful thing, and it certainly is part of the freedom of religion concept, is that the freedom of religion concept is with God. So I would call freedom of religion an actually higher freedom than maybe even freedom of speech is, but they kind of go together, because if you can't communicate with God, you're going to have a hard time communicating with others freely, and vice versa. So this freedom is somewhat connected, and that's why in the Establishment Clause, the first freedom in our amendments to the Constitution, says we have all freedoms anyway, but they wanted to make sure that everybody knew we had this freedom, is joined together to some extent with religion. So there is some aspect to it. Some people think the Establishment Clause is a restriction of religion. It isn't. It's exactly the opposite if you understand what the question of establishment means. It means that the government shall not establish a religion. It doesn't mean that we can't express ourselves about religion. That's very important. Okay, Bobby? Bobby,
Hello?
Are you there? Yeah, hi, Bobby.
Yeah, how you
doing?
Doing
great. I'm doing great. So what would you like to say this evening?
I just wanted to add on to what Bert was saying, how he was just a...
I'm losing him, too. Oh, boy. I don't know. They're falling away. Did I lose them? Oh, they're crank callers? Okay, we got a crank caller. Okay. So thanks for... I think that fellow may have called a week or two ago, if he was the fellow from Tennessee, I think, or something like that. All right, so anyway, let's move on. I don't know how people can be crank calling about things that deal with freedom of religion, but... if that's something they want to be a crank caller about, they have the right to probably express it, but not necessarily to interrupt with what I'm talking about. So maybe they can do it on their own show, or someone else who has a show where they just let people talk, and that might be a good thing for them. Some people want to just hear themselves talk, which is another issue. All right, so let's go on. So, but I did think what Bert asked as a question sounded pretty reasonable, at least the part I could get to. And so I hope I explained the difference between those two, although there is a connection. So let's move on with ageless wisdom. Ageless wisdom is really a means of attempting to allow a person to communicate with God without having to have necessarily a prescribed means of doing so that others necessarily adopt. It's the super... kind of, we'll call it, element of individuality as expressed by a person with their Creator and through and to them without there being other human beings necessarily involved in the process. The odd thing about it is that in some of the past, we'll say, writings about ageless wisdom, many times people function together as a group. And when they do so, they're doing so in ways that strangely seem like, well, wow, they're all doing this together. Then isn't that like an anti-individual thing? Well, it only appears that way because this has to do with the question of what a soul is and how souls function. Souls are really a higher way of expressing the human element. We are all coming from our souls, or I should say almost all of us, coming from our souls and eventually going back to our souls. In between, we have an interfering element called the subconscious or personality part of ourselves. That part is selfish for the most part. It was designed to be so that we would stay alive in our younger years. And before we had enough wisdom in ourselves, we would unfortunately do things that would be dangerous or problematic. So the personality usually was looking out for us in that way. Problem is the personality doesn't have a very good connection with the two higher senses that I described to you. Those senses, the heart and crown chakra senses of understanding and understanding how to create more of God, are mostly controlled by connection with our soul. Some people also say, well, what about the oversoul or the solar angel? Or yes, that's true too, but I count them all as one. So when our soul is connected more to us or vice versa, depending on how you look at it, we get more of these senses active inside of us. And you might say, well, how does that happen? Is it just happen by magic, or do you get around, sit around going om or or something like that? No. Actually, it happens by serving others as souls, because you're trying to help them to be servers, not because you're trying to just give them something. And so when you try to serve people in that way, this connection grows, and you have a better sense of God. And you might say, well, it seems a little circular then. How do you ever get started in this service? And people have a natural tendency to want to do that. So it isn't as vague as it sounds, because we are actually born to some extent with that ability and the desire to do it, but it's countered by the fears our personality has. Okay, we have another caller online. Oh, hello, caller. Are you there?
Hello?
Yes. Hi.
Hello. Oh, hi, Niall.
Hi. Who is this?
This is Alfred.
Hi, Alfred. What can I do for you tonight?
Nice talking to you. I have this written down here in the paper here. Hold on. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I was just going to ask you. So sleepy.
Okay, I think that's another another caller who doesn't want to participate, who obviously has some kind of issues. These people are acting childish. They may even know each other. Okay, so let's go on. If we have a situation in which someone says, well, it's a little circular, you know, I remind everyone that actually we are always born with the capability of still experiencing God and love around us and freedom. We have an internal, we'll say, sense of it, even if we're not actually doing it. We develop a more capability of it and a closer connection to our soul when we act on it by serving other people. And service, again, I'm going to remind you, means that you're helping others to do the same, not just that you're giving them something. A lot of people get that confused. I like the word wisdom with ageless, because when we talk about wise things, when we talk about wisdom, we're talking about giving in ways that helps others to become better givers themselves. That's what I mean by wisdom. So you can see how this all kind of interconnects together. It's a good thing, really. All right. So in these circumstances, it's really amazing to be, we'll say, within the process of developing a connection to God. And when we're doing that in Angel's Wisdom, we're doing it without too many filters. We're not getting a lot of stuff from, we'll say, so others that we have to just either believe or not believe. But it means that ageless wisdom is less based upon faith and more based upon understanding. And therefore, it is more in the educational realm than the religious realm in terms of how it affects humanity and how we grow ourselves. Now, some people might say, well, can you then put the two together? Could you have a religion that also is based on ageless wisdom? And the answer is yes, but But the odd thing about it is, probably not for a long time into the future of humans at the present time on Earth. And the reason for it is this, that for ageless wisdom to actually become a religion, you have to have a fairly, as many people are going to be in that religion, need to have a fairly high level of consciousness or understanding and have a desire to create such a religion together. That's a real unusual circumstance in today's world, because most people, if they do have some understanding of ageless wisdom, are at a more, we'll say, a younger stage. They're more interested in not doing this in unison with others as a group, etc. They're more interested in just understanding God from the standpoint of gaining concepts that make sense to them and prove to them the existence of a creator and their relationship in terms of that creator. So that for that reason, I don't see it likely to happen in the near future. Maybe the medium future, like 100 or more years out, 200 years out from now, we might see something like that actually develop. It's possible. Could it happen in less time? Sure. I think it could happen in decades from now. But then again, in spiritual terms, almost anything could happen. So, you know, it's just possible to go one way or the other. Now, we're wrapping up for tonight the concept elements of what is freedom of religion and ageless wisdom. And then I'm going to talk about the practical side of this and how it affects the whole world in the rest of the show. I did want to make sure that we understand exactly what I'm meaning by talking about these things and how it is that they are going to become, in some sense, a point in time where we can then use this information to possibly correct some problems we have today, maybe deal with some of the issues that religion is causing, and find ways that are resolutions for our whole world. I'm hoping that will come about through tonight's show. Now, in addition to that, I'll give you some more ideas and thoughts about these two parts of tonight's show, freedom of religion and ageless wisdom, as I go into the more practical side, because I think we've covered the conceptual stuff about as much as most people want to hear. So I don't want to put you all to sleep, as some of those crank callers were trying to say, oh, gee, I must be very tired. And nonetheless, they're listening, so maybe they're going to get something out of tonight's show, even if they're crank callers. And I will then, from that point forward, leave it open if people who legitimately want to call in and talk about something that's important to them, they can do so, of course. So, all right, so we're going to go to a break right now. And when we come back, I'll get into the more practical side of tonight's show topic.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower, McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the wise, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight we're talking about freedom of religion and ageless wisdom, and how these two big, huge concepts fit together, and sometimes they don't. And the don't part, I think, is really important for some of the rest of tonight's show, because one of the things that I think may have come out of the first section where I usually define things is that ageless wisdom is self-defining. It isn't a religion from the standpoint that others are telling you or us or me how to experience God. Rather, we are all doing this more or less ourselves, if in the construct of ageless wisdom, and we're not relying as much on faith as we are on understanding. So there's a considerable difference there. But the two are not mutually exclusive, and there is a possibility that someday there could even be a religion of ageless wisdom generally found someplace in the world, or maybe in lots of places. Who knows? That could happen, or it may not. Okay, so then what is the problems we're having with freedom of religion today? Well, one of the issues that I spoke about in conceptual terms is that freedom is lost in religion and in life for people who practice the religion, when others, usually who call themselves something with a title, but not always, or at least act as though they have such a thing, tell the people in the religion what God says to them to do. And that's a big problem, because the more that happens, and most religions have some of this in it, so this is not a small problem. But the more that happens, the less freedom there is in the religion, and that means, in an odd way, by the way I defined religion, there's less God in the religion. Now, that's a terrible thing to express. I don't mean to insult people, because so many people have religions, and I think it's actually a good thing, not a bad thing. But nonetheless, this, at least in the theoretical realm, this has some bittersweet problems to it. And so when we think about most religions, they have some of this in them, some more than others, and the result is there's less freedom, and therefore freedom is the first part of God, therefore there's less of God in the religion. And the more of this that takes place in any religion, you could generalize and say, the less there is of God being expressed to the people who are trying to find God through that religion. That's a scary thing, isn't it? I know. And I hate saying it, because religion plays such an important role in helping humans to become more than human. So it isn't like I want to get rid of religion, just the opposite. I want religion to be more free, of course, more with God in it. Okay, so let's look at some of the problems that we have today. First of all, we have competition between religions for numerical, or we'll say numbers of, people who are part of the religion. The competition is literally by body count, if you want to call it that. Sometimes it's by locality and body count. So many people in such an area, you know, which gives sort of a political construct to what religion is. But the problem is that religion wasn't and isn't supposed to be political. It's supposed to be about our relationship to and with God. And so now it becomes a real difficulty. That causes other people to then become, we'll say, frustrated and sometimes angry, both with their religion and more often with other people's religions, because there's competition. And the competition comes from, oftentimes, the people who claim to be in charge, the people who have the titles. And then it becomes epidemic to the whole rest of the people in the religion. So if it starts with the people who have the titles, it could become very, very widespread among all the people who are members of that religion. So then you have Jews going against Gentiles, and the Gentiles going against different kinds of Gentiles, ones that are believe in freedom but only for themselves and not for others. And you get into all these different things, and before long, it's a treacherous situation, because many people have died, many people have been in some way harmed through this competition issue, which is mostly a political thing. Now, what are some of the other kinds of issues that religions have causes difficulties? Well, sometimes crimes that include capital kinds of crimes, like murder and kidnapping and destruction of major property and that sort of thing, are carried out in the names of various religions. And you might say, well, yeah, I know about that, but what's wrong with it? How come things are, what's wrong with it, but how come it is wrong like that? That isn't so much from competition, although competition can certainly fuel that effect. This comes from another kind of craziness, which is it comes from the people who are writing and or interpreting the thoughts that they believe come from God, that formulate part of a religion, and who are arrogant. When there is a high level of arrogance, people have a disregard for not only the thoughts of other people, but actually the other people's even existence. Their very life may be meaningless to them, because they say, well, if you're not part of what I believe to be my God and my relationship with God, which is my religion, then you deserve to die. Wow. And this is just a form of arrogance. And it's becoming more a problem because arrogance is becoming more of a problem. Egotism is the beginning of the problem. It means a person thinks that their way of thinking is right. But they don't necessarily think that everybody else's way of thinking is wrong, or that other people shouldn't exist, and they don't care about other people, and they don't love other people. But it can lead from that state of egotism to eventually arrogance, where they believe all those things I just said. Then you've got a real problem, because when the leaders, the titled people, whatever we might call them, are now telling people that are parts of their religion, that come and want to communicate through their religion with God, that in order to do so, they have to go kill people, destroy things, take over lands, take over governments, take over schools, take over people's lives, do whatever they tell them to do, then you've got a real big problem. And that's obvious that we have that problem today in large scales. So this is a significant element. And of course, when most of a religion is being affected, or even a substantial part of it, through the arrogance of some of its leaders, the results are that most of that religion is no longer about God. It's more likely about evil or against God. More likely a kind of, we'll call it, aberrant religion at the best, but I would call it evil in my way of looking at it. Now, you can say, well, okay, but these people don't think or feel that they're evil. As a matter of fact, they may think everybody else is evil because they're not part of their religion. Well, that's true. I'm not going to... You know, and then you could say, well, what right do you say have to say that they're evil when they think you're evil, on and on. Well, the difference is that God is good, and God does not seek the destruction of others because they are exercising free choice and freedom. God only says we can interfere with the physical rights of others if they are trying to do so first on us. That's my understanding in Angel's Wisdom. Now, you may not believe that. That's okay, because I guess these other religions don't that we're talking about tonight. But it still means something to be able to think about that and see if you can find God in things that are the way that these religions arrogantly express themselves to be. If you can really see God in that, then you would be at least justified in pursuing it. But if you've only find in truly, I mean, doing objective thinking and trying to be as close to being non-subjective as possible, always going to be subjective, though, the results will most likely turn out to be what I'm saying, that God is good. God does not seek us to force others to think our way. God does not seek us to impose our will upon others. So this is the point that I'm making, that you can find for yourself if you follow Angel's Wisdom, but you may not be able to find it if you are a member of a religion that is formulated by leaders and teachers and writers of that religion who are arrogant. That's where Angel's Wisdom plays a major role these days. It may not be a religion itself, but it helps people to find the truth and real God in the religion that they're in, if you use some of its principles to try to discover those things. That's the good part about it. I think that's really excellent. The bad part about it is that it's not so easy sometimes to see the difference. And the reason it isn't is because the dark side, evil, and sometimes formulated from the state of arrogance in the first place, and almost always arrogant once you become evil, is skilled at hiding itself. It tries to make itself look like it's the good. But if you follow the principles in Angel's Wisdom, a lot of the things that I talk about on these shows all the time, and if you want to read about them, you can. In either books I've written or others have written, you can find there are many ways to discover truth and many ways to find where others are functioning from a dark and or evil place, and as a result, you can shine light on through them, because that's what it does. In your own mind, and sometimes if you help others, in them, theirs too. So it's really, Angel's Wisdom becomes like the, we'll call it the key to finding the truth, and especially about false, quote-unquote, religions that espouse to be about God when they're actually practicing considerable levels of darkness and evil. Okay, so we have then a process now that we can see how freedom of religion and Angel's Wisdom really do go together. They have a very practical, connective element between them. And without one, I don't know if we can ever undo the other, because Earth is a very difficult planet. There's a significant amount of evil on Earth at any particular time. A lot of arrogance at this time, because humans have developed their mental selves a lot. But as you develop something, it can more easily become dark, be used in dark ways. And this is what has happened with egotism, eventually leading into arrogance. And so consequently, this is a very, very important issue today, because hundreds of years ago, thousands of years ago, there weren't as many arrogant people There were still enough to do a lot of harm, but not as many as there are today. And one group, if one person is arrogant, they may contaminate others, and you may have a whole army of arrogant people. And unfortunately, if they are doing things under the guise and belief that it's because of faith in God that they're doing it, they can be incredibly destructive and evil because they're motivated by something that is so basic within us, and yet they are so contaminated by the arrogance and the lack of consciousness that they truly become infected with evil and do terrible, despicable things to others. This is a dangerous place that we now live in, and it's a scary one. It's one that we need remedial ways of dealing with. We're going to cover some of these tonight. And a lot of it has to do with ageless wisdom. The answer is this show. Really, not in total, but it is one of the ways that we can maybe turn around some of the problems where religion is not free and where it has been literally kidnapped into the darkness of people's terrible need to be in control of others and to be superior, this idea that they're better than others, is a terrible thing. I believe it comes mostly because they don't truly, underneath it all, feel that way. They don't feel better than others. They feel, in many respects, inadequate, but it makes them feel better, and they actually choose this as a means in the beginning. Now, eventually, when they become evil, that's not the excuse anymore. They really want to destroy others to gain power and control. That's how you know someone's reached the stage of evil, not just selfishness or having some problems about self-image. But they really seek it from that standpoint. Then they have reached the stage of evil. It almost always involves some form of destruction of other life, and especially human life, and many, many times involves actually killing people. A terrible, terrible consequence of people going down that path. And so ageless wisdom gives us the opportunity to reveal this to ourselves and then help others to see it who maybe haven't slid down so far that ladder to have become evil. Because once someone's evil, I think all the ageless wisdom in the world probably is not going to change their position in terms of gaining more consciousness. It's most likely going to be a really one-way ticket for those folks until they hit a very, very bad place. Okay, so I thought we'd take a little bit of break here at this point. I'll just give you a few minutes before I get back into some of the ideas I have for tonight's show and talk about how ageless wisdom can really be an effective tool to help out the problems in a modern-day scale that we're dealing with. So I want to tell you about, if you haven't heard about it, Bai Chi Jizek. I'm going to tell you about someone I know who recently had some minor surgery, but still surgery. They used anesthesia. That's always a serious issue. And afterwards, they used some of this Bai Chi Jizek because they had some pain. And it did two things that were very, very good. One, well, three things, actually. The one is that it got rid of most of their pain, and they would have been taking narcotics, fairly strong narcotics, if they didn't have the Jizek to rely on. And this is right after, pretty close, right after the surgery. Then the other thing that was noticeable, that within a day or so, there was a lot of swelling associated with this particular surgery they had. And that swelling started to go down significantly while also reducing the pain that was associated with the surgery. So they not only got rid of most of the pain, they reduced the swelling. That's a very good thing, right? What else is happening? Well, they think, and this is an opinion now, of course you can't necessarily prove this about doing a lot of significant testing, this is all anecdotal. They think that that it actually helped them to heal faster. They're seeing some improved levels compared to other times when they've been hurt or whatever. It's just subjective, but then it's just what they experienced. So then you got to ask yourself, wow, that's not only not a narcotic, it's not even a drug. It's a dietary supplement that they took that, because it's using the science of Fai Chi, in my opinion now, it's able to do these things by moving the Qi energy that is not moving properly in a person. And of course, surgery will definitely cause some of that effect until the surgery heals. It gets it moving again more quickly than normal, and it allows the system, the balance in the system of the life energy in the body, so that everything works better, including the healing process, and it reduces the pain, because the pain is the experience of too much or too little energy in a minor center. Wow, that's amazing, or a series of minor centers in this particular case. And so this is a very, very good outcome, and just one of the many hundreds that I'm familiar with. And it's virtually, there's not everybody is helped by Fai Chi Jizik in terms of pain, but most, vast majority are. And there were no side effects for this person, and generally there are no side effects. It's like, well, I didn't take anything, I just feel better, no pain, I'm healing, and the swelling went down.
One.
Okay, we got a caller on line one. Hello, caller.
Hello?
Yes, who is this?
This is Adam.
Hi, Adam. What can I do for you tonight?
Yeah, hi, Niles, I just want to tell you, you got a crack team down there that I was talking to. I guess it would be the producer. He was a nice guy. Anyways, my name is Adam Christopher Jonathan, and I got to ask you, I mean, someone's got to ask you if you're, how can I put this delicately, if you're for or against, oh my God, I'm so sleepy, oh.
Okay, Adam is another crank caller. Sounds like he was Bert in an earlier life. At any rate, I guess these crank callers want to say good things about the radio station in the beginning. That's okay. Nonetheless, I think I'm going to ask our engineer to probably not let any more of these crank callers on, if he can help it. But nonetheless, let me continue on with the Jizik, and then we'll go back to the show. So here's my thoughts about it. If you haven't tried it, you should give it a try. The reason being that if it doesn't work for you, you get your money back. And if it does work for you, you found a natural pain reliever that has a lot of excellent qualities to it, way better than anything that you use as a drug. What's the only downside? It definitely costs more than if you go buy generic aspirin in the store. There's no question about it. Or generic anything else that I can think of that's a drug, because it costs more to make. That's because we want to charge a lot of money, you know, the people who make, I'm really not the person who makes it, I kind of was involved in its formulation, but it just costs a ton of money to make, because it works in a totally different way. And these things are just the nature of the beast. If there was some way to produce this anywhere near the cost of what some of the quote-unquote over-the-counter drugs or even any kind of drug would cost, then the price would be commensurate at least. But unfortunately, it does cost more. So I know that that's an issue for some people, but it does so much that it is worth it to try. If it doesn't work for you, return it. And if it does, the benefits compared to the overall cost are just amazing. They're just terrific. And long-term treatments of chronic things, the pain issues are just virtually eliminated even after you stop using it. So that's an important thing to remember. Overall, that may be actually cheaper if you think of the long-term benefits. Okay, so let's get back to this question of freedom of religion and ageless wisdom. Okay, so we've got some problems today. Let's talk about the specifics. There's extreme versions of several religions on Earth. These versions oftentimes have, we'll say, people who call themselves or believe themselves to be some kind of authority within the constructs of the religion, and who others are listening to, they tell their practicing people in their religion that to be good people in their religion, they have to do terrible things. I'm going to bring up extreme levels of the, we'll call it the Muslim faith, but it isn't really, because in my thought process, it's sort of like a bastardization of it, but not completely, because people can go back to some of the original writings and say, well, here's a place where it looks like that's what they're intended to mean or whatever. But I don't think that the religion is what any one writer ever said or any one prophet ever said, but it's about God. And if you think about it from that standpoint, then you're not relying so much on, quote-unquote, a testament or a prophet as much as you're dealing with an experience a person has through the religion itself in what God is. All right, so we have this, we'll call it Islamic radicals, sometimes they're called. But I don't really consider that really the appropriate thing. I would call it totally, we'll call it arrogant, misguided, and sometimes beyond that evil, people who happen to be calling themselves Islamic practitioners, but who actually are seeking to murder others, take over governments, take over people's rights, try to reduce people's freedoms, try to impose their will on others. What is the problem here, and how do we solve it? Can it be solved as an example behind another religion? Well, here's the problem with that. People of another religion are continually focused on their religion, and they seldom are able to truly, we'll say, get outside of the tenets of their religion to see what the real problems are in evil that they may be facing. And this is difficult, and they may not even see the evil itself or understand it that well, because evil, again, tries to stay to keep itself hid. So it's pretty darn hard for a bunch of, let's say, various sects of Protestants and Catholics and some Buddhists and some, you know, a whole ecumenical council of different religions to get together and somehow convince these quote-unquote, again, I don't like this word, Islamic radicals, to do something different. Because as far as they're concerned, the Islamic radicals, they're all infidels. They're all bad people who need to be either killed or beaten until they're whatever they think of the force of the day should be used on others that don't obey their commands and demands. That isn't necessarily the correct answer. And you might say, well, what is? What can you do with people like that? We already know we can blow them up. We can send unmanned aircraft and shoot rockets at them. We can shoot them. We can, you can do all that stuff. That's true. And if they're doing it to you, you have a right to try to prevent them in whatever way is necessary to stop them. The necessity may include fighting. So I'm not going to deny that. I'm just going to suggest the following. Remember, these people are a religion. Therefore, they depend upon, as I tried to express at the beginning of the show, they depend upon bodies, numbers of people. They can't function with their arrogance unless they have a lot of people following their thought, right? So what we have to do is we have to present stronger, higher thought that is not religious thought, but gets people to conceptually understand God so they can check out for themselves if this stuff makes sense to them. In other words, you get people to think. And once you get people to think, you have yourself a pretty darn good method to help them in some respects. Now you can say, boy, that sounds awfully, we'll call it high and mighty, but maybe we can't do that. Well, maybe these people are just going to shoot us when we try to get them to think. Well, you can make it a physical war, or you can try to bring it or keep it in the mental realm. I'm suggesting you try to keep this more mental, for the most part, and only use the physical side, only really fight, when you have a known intrusion, a known plan, a known something to come after you. And the rest of the time, it would be better to attempt to use some of the tenets that are found in Ageless Wisdom. Not as a religion, though, but as a means to help people see if they can find God. Help people to see if they can create more virtue in their lives, because they're going to innately want to do that. People are loving unless they are evil. Now, the evil ones we can't do much with, but I got good news for you. Despite the fact that there could be millions, even over 100 million radical Islamic people, only a small fraction of them are evil at this time. Probably, you know, it's maybe not even be near a million people. So that's the good news. The bad news is that to reach these other people is going to take a greater concerted effort than what has been employed so far. Let me explain. One of the problems that we have today, you know, in my opinion, is that the nations that claim to be free are no longer pursuing a means of education, which could include principles of Ageless Wisdom if they wanted it to the people who are in lands and in places in institutions which are somewhat different from where those people existed. Although this is not true in places like England and some other countries, where they just allow these people literally to live in enclaves together, but not try in any way to bring any other different varying thought into their system of thinking. I'm suggesting something that was done literally after World War II, where we had Radio Free Europe and eventually Radio Free, that allowed people to hear things that were more true. I'm not talking about propaganda now. I'm talking about education. I'm talking about getting people to start thinking more about the things that they believe in, to see if you can present other sides, allowing people to use their life experiences and their thinking to maybe change themselves. You're not going to get to everybody this way, but you can do a lot better than what we've been doing in the recent times. We sort of gave up on this after the great communism scare, which, by the way, is scarier today than it was even then in some respects. But nonetheless, we've given up on all these elements of trying to teach people, even about historical things that have happened, much less religious ideas and concepts about God. So that what's happened now is evil has its way. It can, through its arrogance, tell people almost anything, and they'll believe it from faith, and they don't question it, and there's no opposing ideation. None whatsoever. So in terms of education, we're failing almost totally. You could say, well, how can you educate people if they don't want to be educated? Well, people do want to be educated if it's available and readily accessible. So we have means of doing this today. We're just choosing not to. And we're putting a lot of money into greater and greater amounts into fighting in a physical sense, when it's much less expensive and much more humane and much better outcomes to do it in a mental sense. So we should be doing it in both ways if necessary. And there's also an in-between way called the astral way, which has to do with dealing with how people feel. Are they being loving or are they being very emotional? A totally different issue we will get to it tonight, possibly. So I think, though, in looking at how we have been approaching this problem, it has not been very effective and has really been failing. It's not just about this particular example that I'm using, which was Islamic radicalism, people who claim to be Muslim, but they're really some kind of egotistical, maniacal, sometimes murderous people who want to force their will onto others, thinking that that's what God wants. Okay. So we can find out what God wants by using some of the ideas and principles in Ageless Wisdom. I'm not going to go through all of those tonight because you can listen to so many shows where I've talked about that. The point is, I'm not trying to teach what to do in a specific sense. I'm talking about what's wrong and what we're not doing in general and how we can make a change to make the world a better place. And you can say, okay, well, that's one religion. Is that the only religion? No, it's not. As a matter of fact, we need to be doing this very same thing throughout the educational system. And one of the problems here in the United States, from where, of course, most of you know I'm speaking from, is that we have given up talking about religion at all in school. And that doesn't make any sense to me. We don't talk about God in school anymore because somehow people believe it has to do with the Constitution. That's not true. The Constitution says that the government shall not establish a religion. It doesn't say you can't talk about it. It doesn't say you can't examine how people think about God. It doesn't mean that you should espouse there is or is not a God. It just means that you need to express to people all of the possibilities and the ways that they might be able to figure out that for themselves, and particularly for children. By not doing this in our schools, we are taking away the most important tool we have to fight all of the unfree religious issues, all of them, because we're becoming blind to finding God ourselves. And once we're blind to finding God, we don't know what God is anymore. We get confused. And we allow ourselves to become victimized by bad religions. So the very thing that people who are, say, atheists are worried about would be best dealt with by having open conversations and open discussions about faith and God and religion at the very earliest of times in people's development. Let them decide for themselves whether they find God or not. But at the same time, it allows freedom to exist for all people. And that's what I'm talking about. And if you believe that there is a God, it allows more of God to exist in people and between people and God. This is a wonderful way to improve through education our system. Now, is this the only thing we can do? No. And is this the I don't want to just pick on as an example Islamic radicals. So I'll pick another religion just for the heck of it. Okay. So let me take up the religion of Roman Catholic. Roman Catholics, wonderful people, know many of them, but they still have their own titled system, and they still filter much of what God says through their own people running their religion. But they do also have an open conscience principle. They have a principle in their religion that states that there is individual communication with, to, and from God. So you don't have to go see a priest. You don't have to in all circumstances. And you don't need the church to actually be part of God, as far as what I understand of Roman Catholics. But you do have to do some of the things that they call Roman Catholicism. So there's that mixture again. There's the two elements. And the same thing, if you have open education, that may eventually move some of that religion into a freer place. Not destroy it, not make it something into an unrecognizable thing, just probably remove some of the restrictions on people's having contact on an individual basis with God. And, of course, you could say, well, isn't that what the Puritans did? They rejected it. Yeah, most of the Protestant religions rejected some of the tenets and religious principles coming from individuals that were part of Roman Catholicism. But still, those religions then adopted some of their own. It's more like, okay, we're not going to be like you, but we're going to still do some of the same things you do, kind of thing. So I don't know how much that corrected the problem. I mean, the Reformation was an interesting experience for all people, but some of the reformers, the Calvins, etc., were even more restrictive about some things than that, and somewhat more having the freedom removed. So, there you go. Can't always assume that that's what's going to be the solution, necessarily. But to just reform or to form a new religion is what I'm saying. All right, so that's the educational side. But what are the other elements then that come into keeping religion free? Well, part of it is that you need to have a free society to have a really free religion. Let me give you an example. You can't have, or couldn't expect to have, a free religion in a society like North Korea. Why not? Well, because every part of society is run by and governed by the state. They believe in staunch elements of Marxist communism, which says that religion is fake and that the government is the god of the people, and there is nothing higher than government. So just on that basis, if nothing can be higher than the government, then religion becomes a facade. If there is any religion at all in that country, it's a facade, and it doesn't have to do with government. As far as I know, there's virtually no religion. But still, that's the danger. The freedom of society is... Now, here's the convoluted part about it. Freedom of society is based upon having freedom of religion. If you don't have freedom of religion, you will never have freedom of society. And if you don't have freedom of society, you'll never get a free religion in that society. So it is circular from that standpoint. But what comes first is who created it. And God created life. God created man. And man created governments and societies. So I guess the answer is pretty clear. It's the creator, or God, who is the supreme being. And governments become an activity by people interacting with each other to create them. So it's an interesting proposal that I'm making here, and that is that you can't have religion any freer than the society in which it functions for very long, because the society itself, especially the government behind that society, will interfere with the religion and or destroy it to prevent it from having more freedom than the government permits. Now, for us today, that's our quagmire. It's the reason that on Earth we don't have religions just blossoming in their ability to be free and find the tenets and principles of ageless wisdom. It's because we don't have governments that are free. And you could say, well, why aren't governments free? Why is this such a big problem? Well, again, it's circular to some extent, because we don't believe in God enough, strong enough, to believe that God wants us all to be free. So people then support, under various models, usually economic these days, governments that will give them certain things, they think, in exchange for their freedom. Those things that they get are always fraudulent fake, and they never deliver. So, I mean, it's just amazing how duped people are to allow governments to become in existence, usually through strong people, strong men, strong women, who come into government and force their will on us. But they only force it if the people let it. And once it's become a real government, then it's very hard to get rid of. So economics play a major role in this. And it's the reason that almost all of the tyrants, the dictators, that seek to have governments that then will impose their will on the people and on the religions that are expressed in their society, those people almost always use one of the failed systems of economics that prevents people from being free and gives them the control over planning the economic lives of their citizens. So that's what's wrong. Ultimately, the system always goes back to God, and the freedom that a person has to both express themselves in a religion and outside of the religion in terms of ageless wisdom to just find God for themselves, that's always impaired by dictatorial, tyrannical governments who often use economic systems that destroy freedom of choice, that limit the ability to transact in terms of economics, to be able to create, be able to be free. And that's the first tenet of God. And so these governments initiate themselves as being anti-God. And that's why you've heard me say that most types of socialism are anti-God, all types of communism are anti-God, which is an extreme version, you could even say, of socialism, where it isn't just the large industries, but all business is controlled by. There is no business, actually. The government is the business. And then all types of other types of tyrannical systems, some of which are not communistic, but are literally oligarchies or are, in some cases, a form of just, we'll say, tyranny. These systems come about because freedom is admonished and destroyed as much as possible by the people in power. Ageless wisdom is a way to try to mitigate this, but there are principles in ageless wisdom that go beyond just education, which I talked about earlier. So some of the principles in ageless wisdom say that you shouldn't be concerned in terms of exercising freedom and trying to do away with evil with your own physical life. And you say, well, wait a second, are you talking we should all just jump off a cliff or something? Not exactly. What I'm saying is that it is fear of your physical life that allows most of these terrible governments to form themselves and to take control and charge. That fear then is used further by the governments becoming brutal and treacherous, and that makes people even more afraid. Now you could say, where does that fear come from? And that's where ageless wisdom comes in. It comes mostly from the fear of death. And ageless wisdom, as a person gains understanding about it, realizes that they're not going to die. Their consciousness is not going to die. They're going to lose some bodies here and there. They're not going to lose their consciousness. And that's what really makes us us. So the fear of death tremendously diminishes, and people are much more willing to fight against evil and fight against corrupt governments and fight against tyranny and fight against the terrible issues that prevent freedom. So you see, ageless wisdom has another very important role to play here. As people learn that there's life after death, and there really is no such thing as death, at least in the terms of consciousness, and that we have so much more to ourselves than what we think, than we're really souls, etc. It frees us to face these dark elements around us. It frees us to fight evil when others will run and hide. It frees us to be free. Free in mind and spirit, free in thought and in action. If you can get your mind wrapped around that concept, you'll see how powerful this idea of Ageless Wisdom can really be, and why it can help to make religion free while also help to free countries and free peoples with divergent viewpoints, divergent principles, divergent everything, except for the idea of freedom itself. Okay, well, why does evil then want to make people afraid by doing terrible things to them? Because evil exists through the power it gets through controlling others. It's about a control issue. It gradually develops from egotism into arrogance, and then from arrogance into evil. The process is kind of slow in the beginning, but can become very fast at the end. It is also extremely well hidden because evil is not unintelligent. It's just not very conscious. It knows a lot and can apply that knowledge in very fast methods, do very destructive things. But at the same time, evil is lacking in consciousness, which is the ability to put together new things and create new things from existing stuff and to discover new things at the same time. That allows it to become very vulnerable if the rest of the people in the society who aren't evil are creative and refuse to become afraid by the intimidation and force imposed upon them. Sometimes that force can be extreme, I know. But if, as long as you're willing to continually stand up and say, hey, we're all going to die, and before I go, I'm going to knock off some evil, you see, because I'm going to be more free when I die than at any time before, and I'm going to help others to be more free before I die than they were before. And I'm going to do in evil and help to turn it into good, even though that process is somewhat dependent upon what evil chooses for itself, and it may choose to suffer for a million years, but that's its problem. With that kind of attitude, you have a whole armor around you, and you almost can't fail. Oh, you may not beat all the evil, but you're going to encourage a multitude of others to stand in your place when you're gone. And what better legacy than that can you think of? It's a tremendous responsibility for people who are studying and trying to live the life that Ageless Wisdom is about. It goes beyond most religions. It's most religions seek a more personal reward between the creator and the individual in the religion. Some of them are altruistic, and some of them go beyond the personal and truly have a soul relationship. Sometimes, but not always. Ageless Wisdom almost always has only that, because it is almost entirely conceptual, and the person can only respond to the religion of Ageless Wisdom, if there is such a thing, or the religious parts of it, by finding God for themselves and not by going through somebody else's do this, do that book of ideas, which may or may not fit most of the circumstances they actually find themselves in. The purpose here is to become creative, because creation and freedom are part of the first part of God. If we are not creative, we won't be able to destroy, fight, go against evil. And we won't be able to help others to become more free. And we won't have freedom of religion. See how it all goes together. Many people have been finding in these times, especially here in the United States, that there's a multitude of reasons why, when you study the founders of the United States, they had a very strong, both religious viewpoint in some circumstances, but not all. But almost every one of them had a very strong ageless wisdom viewpoint. You probably don't know that, but it's true. Now, you could say, well, did they belong to some group or something? Some of them did. I mean, if you look at the signers of the Declaration of Independence, over a dozen were members of the Freemasons. And Freemasonry was part, following parts and tenets of ageless wisdom. Now, I'm not talking about the Illuminati. That's another group in Europe who kind of took those ideas and turned them into very, very selfish kinds of power-hungry ways of dealing with things. They reversed everything, kind of. Not them. Different group. But these people, you know, Ben Franklin, George Washington, people that we're all familiar with, they were members. They were. Now, you could say, okay, well, then, how many weren't? I think there was 56 signers. Well, some of them weren't very religious. They even despised some elements of religion because they had been involved with them and found them lacking because they didn't have enough freedom. But oddly, a lot of them weren't necessarily members of the Freemasons, but they were members of, we'll call it, the thinking parts of humanity that would fit into the concepts, following some of the concepts of ageless wisdom. You know, that's a hard way to describe them. But if you read some of the biographies and you learn about some of the parts about them, you see there's a large, there's just a, like a big, wide base of people who followed so a lot of the principles in ageless wisdom. And they used them in their everyday lives because they found God, maybe not by attending a specific religion. And some of them may have been atheists. There was at least one or two or more that were. The point is that even in being atheists, they thought that the biggest issue was everybody was free to either be an atheist or follow religion or whatever. They didn't want to impose anything on anyone. And that's why they came together to eventually, later after the Declaration of Independence, some of the same people and others came together to create the Constitution, which basically says pretty much the same things. Although it doesn't talk in the Constitution about a creator, because the Constitution is part of the government. It isn't, it's, remember, the government comes after the contract between people and God. The Declaration of Independence was about the people and God, the Creator. The Creator endowed us with inalienable rights, right? Endowed us with those. That's different than talking about a constitution which formulates a government. The government just follows what the people say, and the people follow what they, on individual levels, believe God says to them. That's why it's a one-person, one-vote system. And that's why we don't collectively vote, so to speak, in a en masse way. We vote in a democracy, but then have a republic so that people can represent us, making it easier for the democracy to sustain itself. A full democracy requires tremendous discipline and tremendous responsibility on the people, and you've got to have people then who are really informed about not only ageless wisdom, but almost everything else that governments have to operate within. So we chose a republic, which seems to work. Within that, freedom was one of the biggest issues. Freedom from a corrupt and destructive government. Freedom to practice religion. Freedom to discover through principles in ageless wisdom God. Freedom to create in an economy that's open and free to exchange ideas, materials, forms, money, without great impositions. Yeah, all those things. All those things are part of our system. And that system is the best one yet developed in terms of a model. Not perfect, not even close to perfect, lots of problems still. But part of it comes from that earlier thing I said, that we are not exercising freedom of religion because we aren't able to even see God so much anymore, because we're not teaching about it much in school to our children. You can't expect tomorrow's adults to understand freedom when they're taught blindly to disregard God and to disregard most free thinking when they're young. You're conditioning them. You're brainwashing them. So we have that problem. Okay, let's get back to some of the other elements that ageless wisdom can be helpful in our society. I said I was going to save this for the end, and we're getting closer to that point, so let me talk about the emotional elements that are a problem in freedom. Most people claim that part of the reason they belong to religion is because it makes them feel better. Now, how does it do that? It reassures them that God exists without them having to completely figure it out, because they maybe don't have the ability yet. Or maybe they do, but they don't know how to exercise it. They may not know much about ageless wisdom either, never heard of it. So they don't know that there's methods that you can use to pretty much experience God in the real world around you. But regardless of that, the process from which a person is experiencing God in a religion is critical to their experience of themselves in life. So it makes them feel better to know that God loves them and that they love God. It makes them feel better to know that others around them are following the same principles and feeling the same things in their life. Now, you might say, well, what's the big deal about feeling? Aren't these other things you talked about earlier much more important? And the answer is probably not. For most people, it's more important today to believe that others love them and that they love them as well, and to express it in their daily lives, than it is to fully understand how God interrelates with them on a daily basis in the principles of freedom. I know that's difficult to swallow, particularly after I pushed so much the idea of freedom being so important, but on a functional level, love is probably a greater handle today for us to hold on to than is the principles of freedom and purpose and creation. The reason is that if you don't have the civility, you don't have the helpfulness that comes from people loving, then society can become incredibly ruthless very quickly and very destructive. And with no charity at all, too much reliance will come on government and allow governments to become incredibly restrictive, destructive of rights, ruthless, and you name it, tyrannical. So these are the reasons that you want to have the emotive aspects. Now, I call it emotional. To me, love is not emotion. Love is something that the energy is moving away from a person. Emotion, the energy is moving towards a person. So, but nonetheless, many, many people identify with the word emotion rather than love, so we have to be careful here that I'm not excluding their thought. Now, how does it help then if a person says, well, I belong to this religion, the reason I belong to it is because the people are so loving, because I experience a more loving environment, because I can interrelate with them, and I know that the God that they pray to, which is the same God I pray to, is a loving God. And I can see this in them and in myself, and I experience it in the world around me. I experience God as good. Well, that's good. That's great. I mean, if you think about it, ageless wisdom can certainly get you there. But for a lot of people, that's a more natural way to try to experience their world without going through this gymnastics of their mind of changing some of their egotism and arrogance and being at a truthful level and trying to be closer to their soul, etc. They're just not there yet. There's a few of them that are, and maybe that'd be great, but they're not there yet. So only so much can be done in trying to get people to go to that full extent. So you start at a more emotive level. You start with the more basic level of how does it feel to do this? How does it feel to live like this? Is it something that a person can really rely upon in themselves and experience without a lot of, we'll say, high levels of discipline? And the answer is yes. And that's the reason that I suggest that people stay in religions today and not necessarily all quit religion and say, well, I think this thing ages wisdom. Maybe I'll find a new kind of religion. Yeah, that's great, 100, 200 years from now. Right now, this is probably the best we're going to do, and maybe use some of the principles of ageless wisdom in educating people and trying to help people who are our enemies to find some degree of truth outside of religion and other things like that. But still, the basis of religion for today is going to be much more about love, hopefully, and how a person feels within that religion than it is going to be on any of the other elements that we talked about in tonight's show. That's realism, in my opinion. That's how the world is right now, and so we need to take it as it is and work within it. You might say, well, okay, well, then how are we going to make anything better if everybody's just going to how they feel, etc.? Well, there's no reason the two are mutually exclusive. You can still use some of the principles in Angel's Wisdom while you experience that God is love, and that the experience of being around people who are loving to each other is a more wonderful way of living and produces a more meaningful life. And gradually, very slowly, those folks, there's almost everybody in the world we're talking about now, this is that are religious, this is a very slow process of change. And it should not be forced upon people, never try to accelerate it. It should just be allowed to take place, but by having it available on an educational system, and by preventing tyrannical systems from taking over people's lives. That's the problem. How do you prevent it from taking over? Well, like I said, you've got to be careful about there being enough people, it may not even be more than a few percent, who are willing to make sure that the others are aware to some extent of the principles of ageless wisdom. Doesn't need to be huge numbers at this point. Just enough so that they can get the word out about various things that people can think about and come to their own conclusions about while they're enjoying the religion of love and the other elements that they experience. Now, not all religions push love that much. Buddhists don't. They're not as pushing it as much, but they still experience an inner peace. They still experience a oneness with themselves and the universe that they do connect together with themselves in their religion. Now, not in the writings. The writings are much more ageless wisdom. But in the way it's practiced today, it is more emotive than it is mental. You should be aware of that. So a lot of people say, well, I'm going to go become a Buddhist because it's all mental. It's really not anymore. It's become much more religiousized. It's much more the way other religions have been for ages. Probably one of the earliest religions that were less emotive was Zoroastrianism, which was based to a large extent on principles of ageless wisdom. It still had an emotive side to it, but it was also generously supplied with many of the principles of ageless wisdom you hear me talk about in this show for many years. Or if you read the books that are written, that are just many, many other people have written stuff about this. Okay, so when we look at the process, one way to examine freedom of religion is that people are better off having an experience in a religion of at least the second part of God, which is understanding and love, even if it's missing some of the first parts of freedom, than not having any religion at all. Because no religion at all leaves them open to the victims of tyranny, become victims of tyranny, and victims of evil. Whereas when people have at least some of it, they can reconstruct the first part when needed, when they're being infringed upon, by using some other principles that are part of ageless wisdom, or part of just what's called existence, because ageless wisdom and God are pretty close to the same thing if you talk about it. So it's really about finding God. And as they find more of God than even their religion espouses to, they may realize when evil is encroaching, and they may do something about it to stop it. That's important. Otherwise, the society becomes darker and darker, and freedom of religion will become removed eventually. Even though people are enjoying and feeling really good and loving and everything, their religion will vanish before their eyes, and it will be drummed out through tyranny. And the tyranny usually goes after the children first. Just remember that. That's where it attacks first. If you see it attacking your children, you know it's there. If you see your schools becoming non-godly, ungodly, is the best word, ungodly, and choosing to destroy all of the thoughts and principles of what it means to be a good person, destroying good character, then you know that something's afoot. Bad. Okay? So, let me kind of sum up things so that we can make some sense out of what I said tonight. Covered a lot of areas. Basically, freedom of religion is a tenet of existence. You can't live in any society and not have freedom of religion without that society becoming tyrannical. That's my opinion. Beyond that, ageless wisdom is not a religion at this time. It is a way to help people to discover for themselves God, and to do so in ways in which it's unfiltered. It doesn't go through anybody. It's just a bunch of concepts, and you can test every one of the concepts out to see whether they're true or not. They're not true, you say, hey, I don't call that truth anymore, and you get rid of it. But it's a way of determining for yourself truth, and it allows you to get closer to God without having others in between, and through faith only, to determine what is or is not God, and is or is not virtue. And in general, if we don't have a balance between these concepts and use them effectively, we're dooming ourselves to a dark world that evil will possibly, even probably, take over. And people who are extremists in other kinds of religions, all not just Islamic, but any kind of extremists, will work to destroy religion in general. Arrogance will take over, and what we call religion will become the very destructive side of being human. The very thing that makes us human, which is our perception of God, turned on its upside down and used by evil, will become our own destruction. How terrible of a thing is that? Pretty bad. So these are the concepts I hope that made some sense tonight. Of course, I said a lot more than all that. But, and in terms of the last, I didn't really get into the physical side so much, but if we ever have to use physical force to defend ourselves, the object there is to prevent evil from not just harming us, but from being able to harm others at the same time. So do not believe that you only have a right to defend yourself. You have a right to defend the right for others to be free. Remember that. But you only have that right when it is certain to you and to the others that you're defending that their freedoms are being destroyed. And they need assistance. Think about that as the last statement for tonight's show. I hope this has made some sense. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.